recovery.net. I also wanted to ask everyone to reserve a minute and fill out the feedback form that should pop up on your screen when the webinar is over today. You should also receive an email tomorrow with a link to access the feedback form. Your feedback helps me make sure that the content for these webinars, like the one we're having today, is what you want to hear from. And the speakers, like the ones we have with us today, are the people you should be hearing from. So I appreciate you taking a minute and filling that out when you get the chance. There is normally a PowerPoint component, a visual component. I'm having some technical difficulties, which I'm working on as we're going. So I hope to get that going, get that up and running as quickly as possible. You aren't missing anything relevant to the discussion. But I do hope to get that resolved as quickly as possible. With that, let's jump into today's discussion. Let's start at a really sort of high level and we'll kind of drill down from there. And my first question I'll ask Matt is, how can or should election agencies be using text messages today, or text messaging today, in their operations?
Well, I think driving consumers to the payment portal is probably the most commonly used for the agencies that do that. But you can also save costs by mailing letters and sending them instead of as attachments using text. The agency needs to take into consideration, though, that any attachments sent by text, such as, you know, payment reminder notifications, things like that, they have to be in the form of a secure link, and the data needs to be encrypted. But saving money on payment plan notices, payment reminders, failed payments, and other notices is certainly less expensive by text rather than using traditional mail. My preference, though, would be to send the first notice by mail still. I know other agencies may, you know, do it by text as well, but that's just my opinion and preference.
Awesome. Excellent. Good start. Thanks, Ned and Nicole. Anything else you want to add on top of that? What you think collection agencies, or how you think collection agencies, should be deploying text messaging today in their operations?
I think thus far, a lot of agencies have been hesitant to step into the text realm because of just the uncertainty that exists in terms of the laws, which is, I guess, is part of the reason why we're having this webinar today, right? So I have a lot of clients over the years that have asked me the question of, okay, well, we're thinking about doing text messaging. What's your opinion on the legalities? What are the laws we need to look out for? And I've done these projects for clients and come back and then they still kind of haven't implemented text yet. It seems like people are still waiting quite a bit, but I totally understand the desirability of texts. I mean, particularly if you're thinking about, you know, reaching the younger segment of consumers, you know, the millennial population, they very much prefer to be contacted via electronic means over, you know, face-to-face or even telephone conversation. Text message is popular. It's popular, I think, in all segments, but mostly with the younger generation. So I'm not surprised to see that agencies are looking to contact people through that method as well, whether it's to, you know, send what they would traditionally send in a letter, or whether it's for payment reminders, or whether it's for, merely just trying to get the consumer to engage in conversation.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, Matt, you said it perfectly. This is what we're doing now, which is whenever you send that first communication to the consumer, or whether it's a letter, you can always put in the opt-in to receive text messages in the letter. And that way it's a keyword and it's prompted by the consumer, and you're going to see the opt-in rate go up. Exactly what Nicole said, people want to communicate via text. So if you put that on the letter, people will reach out.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. Let's take another sort of high-level question. Nicole, we've talked a little bit sort of the laws and regulations, but what specific laws and regulations govern using text messaging as a communication channel with individuals within the credit collection industry?
Sure, Mike. I mean, there's quite a few, and they all act a little bit differently in the space. So, I mean, primarily the The primary regulation you're really going to want to look at and think about is the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. It's been pretty much universally accepted that a text is a call. And for those of you that aren't all that familiar with the TCPA, essentially the Telephone Consumer Protection Act regulates calls made to, for our purposes, cell phones. Although there are different regulations depending upon the purpose of your call, if sales have different regulations. But in terms of the credit and collection industry, what we mostly see is causes of action where people allege that they're receiving calls to their cellular telephone using an automated telephone dialing system, and that system, by sending those calls or text messages, violates the act. And the problem with that particular act is it's got a pretty draconian penalty, so to speak. So it's $500 or $1,500 per call or, in theory, text message for non-compliance. And there are definitely some ways to avoid potential liability under the TCPA, which we can certainly talk about, but the TCPA is going to be one of the main ones. The second one is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is always in play when we're talking about collecting defaulted consumer debts. And that can come in a couple different ways. It can come in with concerns about third-party disclosure. It can come in with concerns about the text of the messaging, whether or not all that's required to be said is said or conveyed. Additionally, we have the proposed rules that the CFPB has put out, which, while they're not law yet, give us some guidance on what to think about in the future as to what type of restrictions the CFPB is going to be putting on text message. And also there's some other acts people might not necessarily think about when we're talking about garnering consents, such as e-sign, which has come up more recently in dealing with electronic communications, in not just in text but also in email. So those are kind of the main things. I see here someone said that we're getting a lot of feedback and it makes it hard to understand. Are people still receiving a lot of feedback on the mic? I'm just looking at the question.
If you are, just submit a question and let us know.
Oh, he says yes. Is it everybody or just me? Oh, some people say
someone else says it sounds good. So maybe it's a your mileage may vary situation.
Anywho.
Okay.
So, in short, there's quite a few different laws that come into play. And all of which really need to be considered, in my opinion, if you're wanting to put together a text message plan. Now, that being said, I will say, it is very doable to put that plan in place. You just have to do it the right way.
This is Matt. I just want to add yep. to that. The opt-in seems to be one of the biggest landmines out there, and that's what gets companies in trouble. And I'm just going to give you a recent example. I just saw an article where it's going to be important for agencies to follow whether or not the Supreme Court takes up the request by the counsel for Facebook to review a case called Duguid versus Facebook Incorporated. And that's where there was a ruling in favor of the plaintiff, and the Ninth Circuit expanded the definition of what constitutes an ATDS from the Marks versus Crunch San Diego case. And Facebook's petition points out that there's a split and inconsistent rulings within the circuit. So ACA International is backing Facebook to try and get the Supreme Court to hear that appeal. So it'll be important to follow that in. But besides the opt-in, you also have to provide a way for the consumer to opt out and then identify who the number belongs to if you're going to keep texting them, more than once, because you only get one free pass per the FCC. And any reply from the debtor via tech needs to be monitored because, what happens when a debtor responds with something that is not the traditional opt-out code? Like, they don't type stop. They type, hey, stop calling me or something like that. It's not recognized as a code that's going to automatically opt them out depending on your software. I mean, we've seen some crazy canned replies. I mean, you have the standard stuff that's built into the form, into the phone that's like, I'll call you, I'm driving right now, and anything that you want to reply and add as a custom message back when you get a text message and you're on the road or somewhere else. But we've seen some really crazy stuff. So I think it would be very important to monitor the replies and read through those and have somebody, you know, act on them just to make sure that you, you do and follow the clear intention of whatever the consumer, you know, is trying to tell you or whatever. And as I said before, you know, we get a lot of first, we send out our first notices by mail, but if an agency wants to avoid the necessity and the to comply with the eSign Act, then I would avoid sending that or any legally required notice by text, such as, you know, the first notice or anything else that you have to absolutely send. The one thing not mentioned, and we do medical, so thing that comes into play in medical is HIPAA. So, you know, anytime that you're dealing with PHI, you want to make sure that you're sending it to the person. You have, number one, have their permission, obviously, but you're sending any PHI to the person that it's supposed to reach. So, for instance, if somebody shares a phone or shares a line, you run that risk of disclosing, if you send PHI through the phone or any documents, things like that, you run the risk of a third-party disclosure. Number one, if you're not checking that phone's been reassigned. Number two, if that phone is shared. So that's why it's really important to get that opt-in by the consumer.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to mention is, in addition to yep. TCPA and FTCPA, that a lot of people don't necessarily know about is that the CTIA and the carriers have their own rules as well that we have to make sure that we adhere to. So the carriers such as AT&T, Verizon, whomever, T-Mobile, they may come back, and just because TCPA and FTCPA allows for it, it doesn't mean that the carriers are going to. So whomever, whichever company you're working with, you know, they're supposed to be that kind of that advocate for you. And not just that, but they can work with the carrier relations team and, you know, ensure that the proper messaging is going across the channels. But I just wanted to kind of put that out there so you can have that in the back of your mind as well.
Excellent. Thanks. One thing we've talked a little bit about is the proposed debt collection rule from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which would allow for companies to communicate with individuals via text messaging without necessarily requiring those individuals to provide their consent. I'm going to ask this question knowing the answer, but we'll use it as a discussion starter. Should collection agencies be following that rule now? Obviously, the answer is no, but maybe we should use it as a discussion to how they can, you know, sort of start to frame their operations, knowing that this is probably going to be happening in the next year or so, and how they should be getting ready. Maybe, Netta, you can take that one first this time.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just a proposed ruling now, so I would say don't do that. But I still think, I mean, it's probably just healthier to still look for or continue with an opt-in event. I think it just, it looks better whenever the consumer replies yes, or if they initiate the opt-in, especially on this third-party debt collection phase. It is, I mean, it's highly litigious. It's under a microscope, and you want to make sure that you continue to do it right. Just because the law allows for it, I mean, maybe I'm a little more cautious and maybe more on the conservative side, but I would just say it's just probably better to continue with getting the consumers opt-in.
Well, I mean, I think the reality in terms of this particular rule, I think it's great that this is the CFPB's proposed rule, but it's not going to be applicable to the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, right? So we still have to think about that. Even though the CFPB is saying, oh yeah, for purposes of the FDCPA, we are not going to, you know, require consent, but the TCPA still is going to apply if that text platform is going to be considered an automatic telephone dialing system, and in that we have a lot of, you know, a circuit split, as you know, mentioned, in terms of what is the proper definition of an auto dialer. I think texting without consent is probably a unnecessary risk at this juncture. So I think that's something that people have kind of forgotten when they think about the proposed rules. They're well and good, but there are other laws that also apply and that need to be considered when you're trying to come up with an appropriate program.
And I'll add on to that. We,
As far as what we use texting for, if somebody doesn't opt in and we don't have their consent, and they're not doing it proactively, we don't use it for those patients. But for instance, we have clients that have guarantor agreements that have, you know, consent to call a cell phone using an AETDS, has the language all written in there. So our texting, if we're going to send out that singular text message and try and do that, we'll get the opt-in. Well, first of all, they're given their consent. So that's the written consent in the guarantor. If the carrier is verifying that the person you're trying to reach is actually the owner of the cell phone, then we would send out that text message to them and have them opt in. So you kind of have two methods to protect yourself. You have the guarantor agreement that says, you know, Your Honor, they gave their consent when they signed the guarantor form and gave their cell phone number, and now they've opted into the message. So even if they shared their phone or something in that scenario. But remember, the FCC already has that one free pass rule too to prevent liability, like if a cell phone's been reassigned. So that one free pass would be the opt-in message. But if they never opt-in, I wouldn't risk sending any subsequent SMS messages. And even then, to claim the protection the rule offers, the agency has to be able to prove that you didn't know that the number was reassigned and had a reasonable basis to believe that there was valid consent to call from that number in the first place. Like, you know, that's the number the consumer provided in the contract or the guarantor agreement. If you obtain the number from a skip trace vendor, I don't believe you could claim that protection. So beware, especially if you're a debt buyer and you're buying old paper. If you don't have the original contract or guarantor agreements where you can show and prove that that was the number provided and you're skip tracing for new numbers, I would not recommend using SMS messaging for that.
It looks like we have another question here from an anonymous attendee who would like an example of wording to provide at the end of text messages for debtors to opt out. Matt, and that you guys utilize it, what do you guys use in terms of your opt-out language?
It's basically code or something. I think it's a code that basically just says stop to opt out. But that's where I said people reply with all kinds of crazy stuff. So we review them anytime there's a reply. So right now we're only using the text messaging where the person goes to our payment portal. We're not sending documents. We're actually reviewing solutions by text right now, because of that capability and the saving on the postage costs. But basically the stop would be the opt out. It tells them how to opt out and it gives them, but you got to make sure that the vendor that you're using has that built in. But we review any reply at all, just because, you know, you could be set up for danger if they're saying, hey, stop calling me, or, you know, something like that. But they put the word hey before stop or something. The system's not going to pick that up.
Yeah, I actually had a case like that years ago where the system was only set up to recognize stop. And the consumer said something like, don't text me anymore, and it didn't pick it up. So yeah, that's a totally valid concern.
Excellent. We did get a couple more reports of people that were having problems hearing us. I apologize. We're all on separate microphones. We're all sort of connected in separately. So maybe what I'd ask is maybe disconnect and reconnect, either via the audio on your computer or calling in to listen. Maybe that will help solve the problem, I hope. If it doesn't, I will make a recording of this event. Hopefully it should be fine and clear, available on accountsrecovery.net's webinar recordings page after the webinar is over today, and you can listen to that. We had another question that came in that I wanted to address before we move on. What have companies found to be the most helpful in getting the opt-in? I know we talked a little bit about mentioning it on a letter before. Are there other ways that you've seen or heard been effective at getting people to opt in, I guess, other than, you know, the creditor telling, you know, getting the individual to do it before it's placed in collections?
We actually, our collectors are giving that information out to the debtor, telling them to, you know, type this keyword and send it to this number, and it will lead you to our payment portal. So our collectors are doing it. We publish it on our website on how to do it, the various payment channels that you can use, and we also advertise it on our letters as ways to contact us and go to the payment portal.
I'm just curious for those we've seen using text, you know, the CFPB's position essentially is if you're going to comply with, you know, relative federal disclosures that you would need to get e-sign consent prior to doing so. Is that something that people have been building into their compliance systems, is getting that e-sign consent prior to doing the, you know, validation or whatever else through text, or is it something that people haven't started doing yet? And maybe that's a question for Netta.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm seeing this not in the third-party debt collection space, but I'm seeing it from an original creditor that's sending adverse action notices, and just, you know, even whenever a loan has been approved, they're sending all of their disclosures via text. But what they're doing is they're sending, the initial message is to say, do you want to receive text messages? Yes or no. And then, if they reply yes, the next question is, do you want to receive your disclosures electronically? Reply, let's say, enroll. And if they reply enroll, then it would automatically, and, you know, of course, it links to a TNC where they can, you know, if they click on that, the consumer can see what type of letters they'll be receiving electronically. And, you know, they need to make sure that they have the right phone, like an iPhone or any kind of smartphone, to view the documents. But even if they don't enroll in receiving the disclosures electronically, they replied yes to the first message, and it keeps them enrolled in receiving text messages. And then whenever, you know, they enroll, then they can receive, let's say if it's an invoice or a statement or, you know, like a cure notice or whatever, they can get that electronically. And the proper authentication has to happen on the back end to make sure that the proper consumer receives the correct document. That way, no, you know, breach of privacy happens.
Okay, excellent. Before I get too far into our discussion, I did want to pause briefly and say a few words about the sponsor for today's webinar, and that's Solutions by Text. Solutions by Text is a division of Marketing Response Solutions, a privately held corporation whose primary focus is delivering critical information in an SMS format worldwide. Solutions by Text has developed a proprietary software designed to adhere to regulations within the mobile phone industry. Solutions by Text strives to develop a scalable solution with flexibility to meet industry changes in demand, maintain a functional user interface with various user access options, build products delivering a clear, consistent value, and construct a suite of services matching the demand of the consumer. For more than 25 years, Solutions by Text has partnered with a variety of organizations and multiple industries to design and implement a diverse SMS solution. Solutions by Text customizes a suite of services to meet client requirements and maintain ease of use. For more information, please visit www.solutionsbytext.com. Thanks again to Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. Now let's resume and pick up with our discussion. One question, I know, Matt, let me ask you this one. Do you recommend companies roll out text messaging in stages? I know that seems to be what you're doing, so I'm curious if you wanted to comment on how it's going for you and whether or not, if you were to go back and do it differently, would you do it any differently?
I agree. I think you should be, you know, cautious when doing any kind of new communication channel. But first, I would select a provider that you feel comfortable with. You know, we're already looking at the sponsor of this webinar because of an issue we had with another provider. And remember, you get what you pay for. So, but without diving in head first, I would start off small and test the waters. First, as a management team, you need to decide what you want to use it for and then draft policies and procedures around it and use that as a framework as you move forward and get creative. For instance, we started very conservative, having the consumer, as I mentioned, initiate the opt-in. So we're giving out that information on our website. Our collectors are telling them how they can do that. And it's in our letters as well, rather than, you know, push it out. Our text message is simply driving the consumer to our payment portal right now. We currently don't use it to send letters, which again is why we're looking at Solutions by Text. You also need to make sure you have that clear opt-out method. And, you know, that's something where I've read through the materials that Solutions by Text provided. We actually had a demo the other day, and you know, I was really impressed with it. So the compliance information alone is worth the investigation. Sorry for the shameless plug on Solutions by Text.
I don't think they're going to be that upset with it.
No, I'm not upset at all.
Excellent. What about you, Netta? I mean, what you've seen with your clients, either in or out of the third-party space, do you recommend they roll it out in stages, or how do you usually sort of work on a deployment strategy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is something that, I mean, we preach, which is the crawl, walk, run. You know, we don't recommend that anyone dives in head first. We, you know, exactly what Matt said, take it in stride, you know, go stage by stage, make sure that you feel comfortable. We always recommend that you seed the file, include yourself or your cell phone number to see what that message is going to look like, et cetera. So whenever you do check us out, then, you know, this is something that, you know, we will discuss and we will walk our clients through and show them what the healthy way is to send these messages out. You don't want to bombard anyone, obviously. And you want to make sure that everyone feels comfortable with the messages, not only your consumer, but you also want your staff to be trained and ready to go.
Excellent. Thank you. A couple other questions have come in, so let's tackle those as a reminder to anyone who has a question for the panel to type it in, and we'll try and get to it before the webinar is over. The question, should or do we have to offer an opt-out if we send a one-time link to our portal when the consumer is on the phone with us and has verbally consented to receiving the link via text? Does anyone want to tackle that one?
My opinion,
yes. Go ahead, Nita. I was going to say, I thought every message had to have the ability to stop the communication at any point in time.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually think, in terms of if you're thinking about the proposed rules, that would be consistent with the proposed rules is to have that opt-out in there. It's just smart practice anyway, from like a compliance perspective, like, hey, we don't want to be texting people that don't want us to. We're providing them that opt out, you know, from day one. Also, if you actually look back to the FCC regulations, that go along with the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, they want you to have that opt out in there. While there's no private right of action as to those particular regulations from my recollection, it's still always good to just to comply with what the law is no matter what. So, my recommendation would be yes.
I have a question for Matt and Nicole. So I'm not trying to open up Pandora's box here, but I agree with you that an opt-out prompt should be included in the text message if it's a recurring program. But we've also seen that on-demand messages don't need to have the opt-out language, and that's only if the consumer is requesting one thing, they get the text message that only addresses the, you know, one request that they have. That means they're not really opted into a program. So would that, do you think that would fall under the same category, or do you think that's excluded from including the opt-out language?
I think if you look at the proposed rules, I mean, if your head is where the CFPB heads at, is that they want it to be on everything. They don't really give an exclusion for a particular message. So I would say I would still do it. I don't know why you really wouldn't want to either. I mean, is there really a good reason for not including it? It just seems like the safer way to go.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you're absolutely right. We've had this question come up and, you know, from our clients as to, well, this is an on-demand message. And then of course, you know, you pull up all the rules for on-demand message and it's not as clear, but I'm like I mentioned earlier, I'm more conservative than maybe most, but I would prefer to add the opt-out language just in case. But I just wanted to put that out there just in case if anyone is thinking about that from the audience, and you know, hopefully they'll hear the discussion.
Yeah, I think that would apply more so in a, you know, like a recurring payment plan. But again, I do think it's only a few characters. You know, you have 164, 167 characters, whatever it is. But I think it's safer to have them have it on every message, even if it's just a one-time, you know, link to your payment portal. But I just think it's good from a compliance perspective.
Yeah. We also have another question here about attaching documents via encrypted links. And so someone's asking whether or not the link has to be encrypted as opposing to send it as an attachment. I don't even know. I don't know really what they mean by attachment.
I think they're talking about short code and long code so that you're not really sending an attachment. The attachment in and of itself is a link, but it's a secure link to get their document. I think that's probably what that's referring to.
Ah. I guess the question would be, I guess, why would you want it to be encrypted as opposed to not encrypted? And I would just answer that it's a safety thing that helps ensure that, you know, you're protecting the data that you intend to send to the consumer for a multitude of different reasons. But if the attendee had a different question, they can feel free to clarify.
Sure. Absolutely. Another question that's come in, and this is an interesting one, does opting in cover future accounts? So I guess if you have two accounts, either from the same provider or from different creditors for the same individual, how does opting in work?
I mean, I think it depends on what your opt-in language looks like from the get-go, right? So are you qualifying your opt-in language to say something like, you know, do you want to communicate about this debt via this platform? Or do you say something like, do you want to communicate with us using this platform? I would say the former, you'd probably have a better argument that, you know, it's just relative to a debt, whereas the latter, you could utilize that opt-in more broadly.
And I would just add to that I would treat each debt as a unique debt coming in. But for instance, if they're on a recurring payment plan and you've already got an opt-in on, say, your primary account, new one comes in, you know, I would have the collector proactively reach out, or obviously if you have consent on the first account, there would be nothing wrong with sending a second message on that new account saying, hey, do you want to include this account in your messaging preference or something like that, depending on, you know, how it's set up. Again, ours just drives them to the payment portal. So in that case, I would just have my collector call them and say, hey, you know, is it okay if I opt you in on the other accounts that come in and we add that to the payment plan? Is it okay to add this new account to the payment plan? You know, at that point, really a collector needs to do it unless your software is so sophisticated that they can go and add their own account to the payment plan.
Excellent. Okay. Matt, we're going to go back to you. As someone who's evaluating companies or providers in terms of text messaging tools, what questions should a company be asking when it's looking to set up a text messaging operation? Is it all about cost? Is it all about compliance? Is it all about both? Is it all about something else? You know, what are some of the questions that they could use to get the information they're looking to, that they should need to make a decision?
Mike, it's about everything. But to me, compliance should be the first concern. And it's not just because compliance is what I love. I think if an agency is just looks at costs and the vendor can't meet a compliance standard, then you risk losing all the savings you're going to get in a single FDCPA suit, or worse yet, a TCPA class action suit, not to mention any state laws and regulators that might bring actions or piggyback off other laws. But for instance, if the vendor doesn't have a way to capture and prove consent or stop contact or verify the number actually belongs to the party you're trying to reach, or verify the time that the message is actually going out and reaching the recipient, then you need to keep looking for another vendor. But there's also limitations that internally your agency needs to work out. For instance, say I have consent to call with John Doe and he opts in and he's in a payment plan but then stops. Then your agency gets notification that he's represented by an attorney, or maybe for a bankruptcy that's going to be filed in a few months from now. Obviously, you're marking the account internally that they're represented by an attorney, but you have to proactively ensure that you stop sending text message and your communications going out to him, because, you know, at most state laws, I'm pretty sure, in the FDCPA says you have to deal only with the attorney unless the attorney says otherwise. But you're going to have to proactively opt them out. Your software vendor is not going to know that, your texting vendor, unless you tell them, hey, opt out. Your collectors are going to, some support person, somebody have to get in there and you know, manually opt that person out unless you have, for instance, our software. We have some certain amount of automation that, you know, based on an action or a status code, you can do A, B, C, and D. And in this case, you know, we would mark a box for opt out.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you. Netta, what are the questions that you're hearing from companies as they're looking to investigate and possibly and hopefully deploy a text messaging solution?
I mean, obviously, price is usually one factor. Obviously, the compliance language. What we're also seeing is full autonomy of text templates. This is something that we control. So this is also a shameless plug for SBT, but we maintain control of the templates, meaning we don't want any agent to go rogue and just send any kind of text message. All of the templates are reviewed by myself and, of course, the legal and compliance group of the client, and we make sure that the language is not only, you know, it meets all the federal regulations and, you know, state law, but also just what the carriers want to see, what they will allow to pass through their channels. So I think it's mainly about the compliance language that needs to go within the text message. We usually, the questions that we get is basically consent, opting in, opt out. We hear about, does this number belong to this person? So, you know, we have a product that offers with that, which is, you know, you want to make sure that, that if someone ported their number, if someone deactivated their number, you want to keep track of that. And we can do that. And, we send back a report. So you want to work with a firm that if they capture that information, that they would notify you. So if we get wind of a number being deactivated, then we notify the client to say, hey, we got a report from, you know, AT&T that this number was deactivated. This person doesn't have this number anymore. You may want to take them off your dialer so you don't, you know, call them. If a number is ported, you want to get consent again, according to the CTIA, to send them additional text messages. So there's, you know, a plethora of questions that we get, but it's usually around compliance because obviously no one wants, you know, a lawsuit or any kind of class action, but, you know, that's basically what I hear. I mean, clearly I'm on the compliance side. I don't get a lot of the ops questions, but it's mainly just been compliance from what I've been hearing.
Okay, that's fine. I'm sure there are plenty of compliance questions for a lot of people listening in today. Going back to the operational side, I'm curious, looking at it from an operational perspective, is there a return on investment to be calculated using text messaging? Matt, I know you were talking about sort of the saved expense of not having to send out letters as a possible reason to sort of look at text messaging along with the benefits of maybe a more engaged conversation or more engaged conversation that you're going to have. But how do you sort of, how should an agency look at the ROI on deploying text messaging?
Well, I think you hit on the first one right away. I mean, it's the difference in your letter cost between versus, you know, your cost of your actual text. But look at in the old days, okay, it was all about letters and a person being on the phone. So you're looking at hourly wages and postage costs. So maybe to start with, you'd look at the average hourly rate for a collector in there and how long it takes them to deal with an account versus, you know, for instance, if you're going to use an SMS message to send not the validation notice, but maybe a second notice or some kind of specialized notice, like your payment failed or something like that. You know, look at the time the average hourly collector would take to handle that matter versus, you know, an automated text message. I mean, can you even calculate that other than just the cost of the text to go out? And then if there's any monthly reoccurring costs associated with the text vendor, you know, break that up into how many texts, you know, you send per month so that you get not just the cost of the text, but a fair amount of any fees or reoccurring fees or monthly fees and stuff like that. But I think that's where you would start.
Okay.
I'd like to add
that's
okay. So what I saw recently here is one of our clients, they opened up one of the products that we offer is two-way texting. So that way you can have a back and forth conversation with the consumer. And they did their own scorecard, and they measured the amount of debt collected from agents that were on the phone versus the agents that were using the two-way texting. And it was 4-1, which is pretty high. So they, in their mind, the ROI is, I mean, obviously it was worth the investment because they were, you know, they were collecting 4-1 in text messaging versus the agents over the phone. They just found more people were more responsive via text message.
Yeah, it's more efficient. And, you know, like the millennials and the newer generations, that they want to use their phone. They don't want to talk to a person.
Yeah, exactly.
Nicole, I'm curious, are there compliance costs that may be saved, or compliance expenses, you know, that could sort of be factored into an overall ROI calculation that an agency might be doing to look at deploying text messaging?
I mean, I don't think it's really that much more additional in terms of what you would already have. I mean, sure, I'm sure it would maybe add in some duties like any new project. What if you have a compliance officer or compliance professional? I don't know that those really would be, you know, that great. But again, it depends too on what your system is that you're planning on using, right? So, you know, like Matt mentioned, like from the get-go, you know, if you have a scenario where you need to manually review all the opt-outs, that might be something that's going to be costly, as opposed to, you know, if you didn't need to do that for whatever reason. I will say that, you know, text messaging, because there is uncertainty in terms of regulations and whatnot, there is a lot of litigation over text messaging. And so, you know, from that always is included in a compliance cost as well. So that might be something to consider.
Got it. Okay. When or if an agency or an operation decides to start deploying text messaging, how should it be set up within an organization? Who should be in charge of it? Does it sort of fall within IT? Does it fall within sort of telephony? Does it fall within compliance? Does it fall within operations? How does it sort of fit into an operation?
So, I mean, that really depends on the organization. So my previous company that I worked at, we used Solutions by Text as a vendor. And it was placed in operations with a huge oversight from legal and compliance. IT did not really factor in because there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, there wasn't any integration or authentication or whatever. But it's mainly just sending the payment reminders, and operations knew and understood the cadence. And so in that scenario, they were in charge.
This is Matt. I agree with that. I think it just depends on the size of your organization, how many people you have, the collection software that you're using, and the ability to automate processes and stuff, and the extent to what you're going to use texting for. If the patient's going to proactively, you know, initiate the text to you to get a payment portal link, then it's going to be minimal. Just somebody maybe to review opt-outs or process them, or if your system can take a report and then, you know, not manually, but automatically mark those accounts as opt-outs. But again, it's the extent to which you're going to use it and, you know, your resources, I guess.
Okay. I'm curious, looking at it from the other side of the conversation, you know, how involved should an agency's clients be as an agency deploys text messaging? Obviously, there needs to be conversations about consent and what consent has been given or not given and how to handle that. But just in sort of using text messaging, should an agency sort of talk with its clients about whether they want them to or not want them to, or how to use it? Is that a conversation that agencies should be having or is that a decision that the agency makes on its own?
I definitely think so. I think you should be, you know, upfront and just fair and transparent with all of your clients with any technology or payment, you know, processing method you have. There's agencies out there or clients out there that, you know, for whatever reason, don't want you to use an automated dialer or they don't have ATDS language in their guarantor agreements and stuff. But I would definitely be proactive and reach out regarding how compliance has been vetted so that you're reassuring them. And how the communication preferences of the consumers have changed over the years. You know, in many cases, your clients may be doing things they were doing 15 years ago, and they can't set up a payment plan, or, you know, they can't do some of these, adapt to these newer technologies, especially the larger organizations. They can't adapt as fast or set things up like this. And I think it helps to make them aware, number one, of the compliance issue, and number one, how it's going to benefit them, because you're going to be able to recover more money in a more efficient manner and, you know, adapt to communication methods and payment methods that consumers are leaning towards in this day and age.
I think the other thing, just to add on to what Matt said, is that, you know, at least under some of these federal laws we've been talking about, you know, if there is an issue with the text and there is a lawsuit, many times the creditor or the debt purchaser, if you're working for a debt buyer, will be brought in as a defendant as well. You know, for two different reasons. Under the TCPA, there's authority for the proposition that essentially when a text or if an auto dialed, you know, call or text is made by a debt collector, the creditor is responsible for that text message and can, you know, be sued under the TCPA. So if you're doing something like that, you know, and obviously there's always indemnifications and everyone's agreements and whatnot, but it's probably a conversation that creditor, you and that creditor should have now before, you know, they get surprised with a potential lawsuit in the future. And then they're mad, you know, not only because they've been sued, but that they didn't even know this was happening in the first place. So I think that's probably part of a open conversation that you'd want to have with your client, whoever that may be.
Okay. Want to remind everybody, we've just got a few minutes left. So if you have a question for our panel, this will probably be your last chance to type it in, and we'll try and get an answer before we run out of time, to give people a chance to ask questions. I had a question for the panel, and I'm curious, does the type of debt being collected impact how text messaging is used? Medical debt versus telecom versus credit card versus, you know, whatever. Does the type of debt matter, or the amount of debt matter, or have any impact?
Well, if it's medical, you certainly have HIPAA to worry about in addition to all the other alphabet, you know, regulations and laws and stuff out there. But I think old paper that has been purchased, I would want to ensure that the phones provided, I mentioned this before, can be proven through contracts or guarantor agreements, you know, of some kind. You know, credit card debt could be credit card debt, but credit card and contracts from years ago that a debt purchaser has bought, just, you know, be aware, I guess.
I agree.
Yes.
Netta, do you see, yeah, go ahead, sir. I'm just wondering, you don't see any different questions or different types of solutions for different types of debt?
I think, I mean, from what I've seen, I've been with SBT for a year, and really, it's just my experience is that texting and third-party debt collection in general is just not common. I think there's still a little bit of, you know, there's fear out there, and I completely understand why. But the reassurance that we, you know, that we try to give is that just make sure that you're working with someone and that you do everything by the book and just do it the right way. And I think that should, you know, ease or lift some of those fears just a little bit.
I think you left out a word when you said you meant to say not common yet.
Not coming yet. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we've just about run out of time, but before we wrap up, we do, actually the question just came in. Do text spam traps loom on the imminent SMS horizon a la email collection pains? Does anyone want to tackle that one?
Can you reread that, Michael? I'm sorry. I don't think sure. I heard it right.
Do text spam traps loom on the imminent SMS horizon a la email collection pains?
Spam traps?
That's interesting.
Yes.
Like, I don't really understand the question. Like, what's...
I'm trying to...
like marketing? I feel like that has a more of a marketing...
That's possible. To the person who asked that question, if you wanted to try and retype it, you know, clarify what you're looking for.
I don't know if they're talking about like a can spam type of scenario or, I mean, there's different regulations, at least relative to the TCPA, whether or not it's like a sales scenario. There's specific regulations related to that, which don't necessarily apply to us in our industry. Cause I mean, we're not really selling anything. So we're not really spamming people. I think spam is more, there's more association with, you know, advertising. We're not really advertising anything.
Right.
So well, I think
we did get a clarification. The question is, do you see carriers blocking texts like Gmail and other email services block emails and put them into like sort of a spam folder?
Oh, maybe. I mean, that's potential. I know obviously there's been several initiatives to block auto-dialed, you know, messages and calls, you know, by the carriers and by the FCC. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, there's certainly potential for that in the future, but I haven't heard of anything as of yet.
Well, knock on wood for that. We've got just a couple of minutes left. What I'd like to do is go around the panel and give Matt, Netta, and Nicole, give you each a chance to sort of offer any parting words of wisdom, a chance to summarize your thoughts for today, you know, offer any key takeaways, maybe anything you wanted to get a chance to mention but didn't because of the way the discussion went, or just sort of offer some concluding remarks if you don't mind. Nicole, would you mind going first?
Sure. I mean, I think in short, you know, there are ways to develop a compliant text messaging program. I do think that text is going to be the future method of communications, particularly because it's so attractive to, you know, the younger demographic. So it should be something that should be on everyone's mind really for the future to think about how they're going to comply. But I think it's just time to do the due diligence now and figure out how you're going to do it. You know, what's your plan going to be? And you'll talk with your compliance person or your counsel about what that's going to look like. And you know, there's really no reason to be as, hesitant, I think, as some people are, that would kind of be my parting thought, so to speak.
Okay, great. Thank you, Matt.
I just think the technology is ripe for use. Not on the ARM side of it right now, but I'll give you an example. Anybody who wants to do this, you try it for free. I guarantee you're going to get this result. Go to cars.com and go search for a vehicle that you want and put in your vehicle. Just pretend you're searching for a vehicle to buy. You will get phone calls and text messages. Like, for instance, I was in the market, so I got a text message saying, "Hey, Matt, this is Brody from, you know, ABC car company. Is it okay if I text you some sample cars and contact you this way?" You know, I mean, immediately. And within that day, I must have had 5 or 10 different phone calls and text messages from different companies. So if you don't believe it, try it. But the technology is very powerful, including, for instance, Allstate Insurance Company. I get text messages saying, "Hey, is everything going well? Your payment's coming up. We're about to debit your card for your annual fee. Do you want to break that up into 6 months instead?" You know, things like that. The technology is just ripe, and I think we should embrace it cautiously. But I definitely think you should look into it, and again, go in the small steps. But we're going to have to see what the CFPB has to say about the final regulations and again, with changing laws, it really is going to depend on what administration is at the helm of the CFPB and the FCC, because, you know, next year in 2020, things could change on a dime.
Absolutely. Thank you. Netta, you get the last word today.
Okay, great. I mean, there's really not a whole lot that I can add after Matt and Nicole. I think those are two great summaries. The only thing I can say is, you know, just check out solutionsbytext.com and we can help you out.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, before I let everybody go, I want to thank Netta, Nicole, and Matt for their insights and their time today. This webinar would not have been possible without their participation, so I think we all owe them a huge thank you. I also want to thank Solutions by Text again for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.solutionsbytext.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to help identify topics and speakers for the future. And a recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net later today. And stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Thanks, everybody. Panel, great job. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Have a good day.